Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The New York Times calls Salman Ahmad's band, Junoon, the U2 of Pakistan. They are huge. He's huge. A rock star in half the world. Salman Ahmad went to high school in the USA, caught rock and roll fever, took it back to Muslim Pakistan, and made a fusion of classical tradition, Sufi mysticism, and Led Zeppelin. But the fusion has proved easier in music than in life. He's tackling peace, love, and passion in a time of drones and the Taliban. This hour, On Point Muslim rocker Salman Ahmad and his rock and roll jihad. You can join the conversation. Are you already a fan? Is Ahmad on your iPod? Can Islam and the West embrace rock, peace, and love? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Salman Ahmad. He's founder and lead guitarist of the band Junoon, which has sold over 30 million albums. Q Magazine calls Junoon one of the biggest bands in the world. If you're from South Asia, you probably know that. Salman has worked with Melissa Etheridge, Sting, Def Leppard. He's shown Mick Jagger the Lahore nightlife. His next album, Rock and Roll Jihad, is due out later this year. His new book is Rock and Roll Jihad, A Muslim Rockstar's Revolution. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Salman Ahmad, welcome to On Point.
Honored to be here, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, and it's great to have you. I learned a lot in learning about your story. Wow, it's a wild one, and we will hear it. But you tell us first, please, what is rock and roll jihad?
Well, my life has been, you know, straddling America and Pakistan, Islam in the West. And so for me to tell this story, you know, when in my book, I thought rock and roll and jihad were the two words which most kind of defined my life. You know, rock and roll being the passion and jihad being the struggle.
The passion and the struggle. But, of course, you know how an awful lot of Americans hear jihad. It strikes fear.
That's right, Tom. Actually, you know, on 9/11, Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda hijacked the word jihad, which, you know, is a word, is a positive word in Muslim culture. It's a word about self-improvement, of striving, you know, about self-discovery and, you know, overcoming hardships. And they, in a weird case of identity theft, you know, they sort of became the voice for Islam. It's like, you know, the KKK being the voice for Christianity. And I think what Islam and Muslims need to do is to rescue jihad from the terrorists.
You know, I have to say, looking at your story from a distance, here you are, Pakistani boy, grew up until, what, 11 or 12, then came to the United States for middle school, high school, you know, got into rock and roll, had all the rockers posters all over your walls. Then back in Pakistan with that rock and roll dream, and it looks like a kind of dangerous way to be. But you tell us. But I mean, you've had periods under more than one prime minister when your art was banned, when your performance was even banned. You've gone very nose-to-nose tough with the Taliban, saying, you know, give the Taliban an inch and they'll take a mile, calling on the leaders of Pakistan to really knock the Taliban down. Yet you're out in front of, I don't know, thousands, tens of thousands, you know, over time, millions of fans. Is it a dangerous life you're leading?
You know, that came with the turf. I, as I write in my book, you know, I was going to a suburban high school in Rockland County, New York, and I was in a garage band, Eclipse, which won the Battle of the Bands.
At the high school. Yeah, great. And you never got over it. You're still on that high.
And in my mind, I painted a picture, you know, as all teenagers do, you know, we have outrageous dreams. And mine was to play, you know, guitar for the rest of my life, rock guitar. And coming from a South Asian Pakistani family, yeah. as you know, my parents, you know, always from when I was 6 or 7 years old said, Beta, you're going to become a doctor.
Yes.
Now,
that's just the way it is. But except it wasn't, ultimately.
And in my high school, you know, when I was in high school as a senior, one of my uncles, my dad's side, he was a surgeon, and he came over and he had a, you know, man-to-man talk with me. And he said, well, you know, your parents have high expectations of you, Salman. What do you want to do? And I was in my room, and I had pictures of, you know, Jimmy Page and Mick Jagger and the Beatles behind me and Jimi Hendrix. And I pointed to those pictures, and I said, well, Uncle, I want to spend the rest of my life like those guys. And, you know, so when he looked at those pictures with his long-haired, you know, Robert Plant and Jimmy Page.
And with your Les Paul guitar in the corner.
With my Les Paul in the corner and dragons painted on Jimmy Page's pants.
Yeah.
He said, Beta, you want to become a Mirasi?
Like a low-class musician. Like a...
Exactly. I mean, the lowest of the lows, right?
Yeah.
And so he went and you know, told my parents, he said, you have to send him back to Pakistan now.
They did that. You went to medical school like a dutiful son. Came a kind of a talent night there. You pulled that Les Paul again to perform for your classmates in medical school in Pakistan. And you came face-to-face with, more or less, the Taliban.
Well, yeah, because what had happened, I mean, as I tell in my book, that I experienced and endured two extreme culture shocks. One was going as a, you know, 10, 11-year-old from Lahore, Pakistan, and going 10,000 miles away to New York and growing up in a suburban high school, you know, in the heart of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And then, you know, finding my space there finally, you know, I'm a guitar player, I'm in a band, and all of a sudden I get taken back to a radically changed Pakistan. Because while I was away in the States, Pakistan changed from a democracy, which was, you know, the Prime Minister Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, who was Benazir's dad, who was overthrown by General Ziaul Haq in a military coup, hung, and then 11 years of military dictatorship. So I arrived smack in the middle of that.
Yeah.
And General Ziaul Haq, although he was an ally of the U.S. fighting the Soviets in the Afghan jihad, he was like having the Taliban in power.
Tell us what happened when you were confronted after your great solo performance for your classmates there in the midst of this history.
Well, you know, as I tell in the opening of the book that, you know, I just wanted to get up and play somewhere. And so we, you know, 60 of us, our medical students, we set up a talent show. You know, like a gong show.
Yeah.
And you know, whether you could tell a joke or you could juggle or sing or, you know, do whatever, you know, you had a chance to be on stage. So my, you know, great talent was at that time, this is now I'm talking about 1982, was to do Eddie Van Halen's Eruption, you know, which was like a finger-tapping, really fast heavy metal guitar solo. And I thought, I'm going to play this and, my, you know, I'm going to be a hero amongst my classmates. And so when my turn came after the juggler, I get up on stage, I shut my eyes, and I start going, you know, turn the amp to 11. I had a friend of mine on drums, on half a drum set, and I started playing. And the moment I started, you know, playing finger tapping, I started hearing shrieks and you know, screams. And I said, wow, I'm really having a great impact. What had happened was, as I opened up my eyes, was that a bunch of you know, students from the religious parties, they gate crashed. They started screaming, fahashi, vulgarity, harami, you bastard. And then they came up on stage and, you know, he looked at me, you know, he was dressed as a, you know, in shalwar kameez with a big beard and not too
long
happy
shirt,
about my guitar.
All the rest, yep.
And he took my Les Paul and he proceeded to smash it on the marble floor. So that was my welcome back to Pakistan after, you know, sort of, you know, going from culture shock in the States to culture shock back in Pakistan.
Salman Ahmad, stand by. That was a low point at the beginning of a career that got very big. Here's Salman Ahmad's breakout hit, Jazba-e-Junoon. It became the official song of the 1996 Cricket World Cup, a huge nationwide hit in Pakistan. If you have the spirit of passion, never give up. Those who struggle will always touch the skies in everyone's eyes. Pakistan, Pakistan is mine, Pakistan is yours. Big, big hit for Salman Ahmad as he went to rock and roll stardom in Pakistan, South Asia, much of the world in the 1990s. Who does Pakistan belong to these days, Salman? Sometimes from this distance, it feels like it belongs to religious extremists.
Well, it's a much misunderstood country, Tom. You know, throughout, Pakistan gained its independence along with India in 1947. And I, you know, when I grew up, it was a teenager. And it was a country which was progressive, music, poetry, theater, film, all homegrown and flourishing. And then it changed. When military dictatorship came in the 70s, this is while I was out of the country, General Ziaul Haq basically wanted to take the country back to the Stone Ages. And, you know, for 11 years, although, you know, he, like I said, he was an ally of the West against the Soviets in Afghanistan, he took the cultural landscape of the country and radically transformed it.
Salman Ahmad, please stand by. We have to take a short break here, but there's much more we want to learn. I want to go out of this segment with another big song for you, Ehtisab, Against Plutocracy and Corruption in Pakistan. Got your video banned. Well, listen, Pakistani rock star Salman Ahmad is with us. And listeners, you can join us. Are you a Salman Ahmad fan, a Janoon fan? Have you been at their concerts when the crowds are screaming? Is he on your iPod? What do you think of his stand as a Muslim rocker? 800-423-8255 is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Pakistani rock star Salman Ahmad about war, peace, music, and Islam. Behind us right here, one of his big songs, Goom. Made a mistake on the way out of the last segment. That was Garaj Baras. We'll hear Ehtisab in a moment. You can join this conversation. Are you a Salman Ahmad fan? He's out with a new book, Rock and Roll Jihad. Can you imagine trying to span rock and roll and fundamentalist Islam, trying to persuade the mullahs that it's cool to rock out? Muslims, do you agree with Salman that there's room for rock in Islam, room for music? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Salman Ahmad joins us in New York. Went to school in the United States, caught the rock and roll bug, took it back to Pakistan. It's had him banned several times, but he is big, very big, in the South Asian music scene and beyond, playing with Melissa Etheridge and many more. She wrote the intro for his new book, Rock and Roll Jihad, calls him a light bringer, a way shower. Clint in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Clint, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make a quick comment that I'm a rock and roll musician, and I have been for 25 years. Rock and roll embraces everything. It's artwork. I only hope that the rest of America can embrace Islam the way it's obvious that rock and roll already has. And I thank you very much. I'm going to hang up. I'm on a cell phone.
Clint, thank you very much for that. And let me get one more right here. Granby, Connecticut. Ed, you're on the air with Salman Ahmad.
Yes, hi. Thanks a lot. I think it's a great idea to spread peace and love throughout the world. And any venue that can do that and reach millions of people is a good thing. Corruption and all that other stuff that goes along with greed, we have no room for it in this place. So I really commend this gentleman for getting out there. He's on the front lines. He's putting himself in jeopardy. But he's doing a good thing. And I would just caution him to stay away from the drugs. But the peace and the love and the music, go for it.
Ed, we got it loud and clear. And let me get one more right here for you, Salman. We've got Rafia calling from Hyannis, Massachusetts. Rafia, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a huge fan of Salman Ahmed. I'm a middle-aged woman, a mom, and I learned of Salman Ahmed through my daughter, and we went to his show in Boston University. It was fantastic, and he conveys the real Islam, and we don't need Taliban and their Islam view. So I love him, and I'm looking forward to read his book. So.
Rafi, let me ask you, you know, he's had some big debates, we'll hear some of them, about whether Islam even permits music, and you're a big fan of his, so I guess you, as a Muslim, you think it does, but not everybody thinks that.
Mostly his the view of Islam is peaceful, and he's spreading peace, and he had lived in this country for so long. He had went to college, and the way the Taliban are spreading is wrong Islam, and we don't need those guys. Love his music. He has so send the messages through his music is so good. It's peaceful, and we need more musicians like that, you know.
And Rafi, you know Salman Ahmad's work than a lot of my listeners may. Give us a sense of just how big a rock figure he is, a music figure. How big a star?
He's a huge star for Americans here, and I'm here in this country from 30 years, and love his music, every song of his. I'm a huge fan, and I'm, you know, and my daughter is a student in BU, and she loves the teenagers, and you know, old middle-aged women. We all love
him. Everybody's there for Salman. So, thank you very much, Rafi. Salman Ahmad, there's thumbs up from 3 points on the compass right off the bat. If you'd be good enough to hang in here for a second, I want to give our listeners who don't know the kind of struggle and debate you've had a sense of them. There was a wonderful documentary made about you a couple years back, The Rockstar and the Mullahs. And there's a scene in it, we'll play a couple of bits from this, but there's a scene where you visit a madrasa, an Islamic school, and you're sitting cross-legged on a carpet with four students, teachers in their white robes and their skull caps, and debating whether or why God would have wanted music banned. And then pretty fearlessly, it seemed to me, maybe provocatively, you ask for your guitar and you sing a verse of the Quran for them, and they're watching you looking charmed and very uncomfortable that, I don't know, maybe that they might be party to a sacrilege. But if we could listen somewhat to that exchange.
Rabbana atina fid dunya hasanatan wa fil akhirati hasanatan wa qina azabana.
And that's how I find peace. You may not know this, but for your own good, you must study this more. The Quran absolutely forbids music. You're not allowed to sing the Quran.
Who says so? I'm looking for evidence. You say it's written, but tell me where it's written. Show me. I don't understand that if you have good intentions and the music carries a good message and brings peace to people's hearts, what is the harm in that?
Look, the fact that you have good intentions is all well and good. You'll get acceptance for that. But it's your decision whether you want to continue doing what is forbidden.
And don't I have the right to make my own decisions?
You have the right. It's also up to you whether you want to go to heaven or hell.
Salman Ahmad, in a madrasa conversation with students and teachers there, someone please interpret this for us. What schools of Islam are meeting in this confrontation we just heard?
Well, I did this documentary for Wide Angle and the BBC. Angus McQueen was the director along with Ruhi Hamid. And the fact is, you know, as you asked earlier, that what's the role of music? That's the question that I went across Pakistan. And this was a madrasa in Peshawar. And I went to religious scholars. I went to people on the streets, you know, women, professionals, people on, you know, on buses. And nobody could, neither could these religious students in the madrasa tell me that where does it say in the Quran that music is haram, which it means prohibited.
Though they're pretty clearly believe that it is, and they say, you choose, Salman, heaven or hell, it's up to you.
Well, here's the deal. And I've studied this. I teach one day a week at Queens College in New York, Muslim music and poetry. And for the last 1,400 years, Tom, there has been, great flourishing poetry, music, inventors of musical instruments. You must have heard of the stringed instrument oud.
Sure, oud, O-U-D, right? Sure.
Right, and so in Andalusian classical music, there was such a cross-pollinization of cultures, Islamic culture, gypsy culture, the Spanish guitar, according to Cat Stevens, Yusuf Islam. You know, a man called Ziryab, a Muslim from Iraq, helped design the Spanish guitar. So a lot of these kids who are uneducated basically learn by rote the Quran in Arabic, which they don't understand. And the mullahs who control these madrasas have a one-point agenda, not to disseminate knowledge about religion, but to keep their own power. So in this, later on in this documentary, mm-hmm. Rockstar and the Mullahs, and as I write in my book also, why are these people so afraid of rock musicians or musicians, you know, any sort of musicians, is because they're afraid of losing their gig. You know, the reason they want me to stop
their
rocking.
Their job, their place in society.
Absolutely, because what does music and poetry do? I mean, the 13th century poet Rumi,
mm-hmm.
he said, if you follow the music, it'll show you the way. And his poetry, the Masnavi, it's love poetry. And so many other poets like Baba Bulleh Shah, the song that you played in the opener, mm-hmm. Bulleya, they talk about self-knowledge. And these extremist radicals who, by the way, are a minority in Pakistan, they are a minority, but they are a noisy, violent minority. And they shut down any debate on it. And in this film and in my book, as I write, they didn't want me to talk sense. They just saw me as a long-haired, ponytailed, guitar-toting musician, and they wanted to put me in my place, but they couldn't answer any of the questions. I did research, and in the Quran, which is the Muslim holy book, there is no mention of music being prohibited. There is no mention of musical instruments being prohibited. And the thing that comes through the hadith, which is the sayings of the Prophet, which makes a lot of sense, is whatever you do, whether it's playing music or, dealing any sort of trade in the world, well, do it with fairness and justice. But to distort scripture and to make it fit the way Al-Qaeda and the Taliban do, you know, I mean, I call it identity theft, that they sort of have become the speakers for Islam, and we have to rescue jihad from them.
Salman, I've got questions about that. So do our listeners for you. TJ in Boston, you're on the air with Salman Ahmad.
Hi, Ahmad. I have a question for you, and I'd just like to posit something first. The conflict between America and the Muslim world or Islam is one, I think, mostly of ideology and culture. And so when you're bringing American-style music into a country like Pakistan, aren't you perpetuating that conflict by Americanizing a Muslim country?
Good question there. Thank you for your question. Well, first of all, I think that's another misperception. I mean, when you look at when I was growing up as a teenager listening to the Beatles, well, George Harrison loved listening to the sitar, and he brought that into Norwegian wood. He loved listening to harmonium, tablas, musical instruments from my part of the world, and he brought that into the Beatles music. Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin listened to so much of Muslim, Moroccan, Arabic music. And if you listen to Kashmir, all those scales are traditional Arabic modes and scales. So,
but you didn't have British or Americans saying, this is the end of our culture. These were, I don't know, more comfortable, open, maybe more confident cultures that said, great, let's listen. But that's not the response you're getting from the mullah, certainly.
Well, when I...
Though from many young people at your concerts and more, that is the response, I guess.
No, let me give you a historical perspective on this. When I was 9, 10 years old, I grew up in a Pakistan which was open to... I mean, my mother's records were everything from, Elvis to, you know, Jewish folk music to Bollywood. It was a progressive culture which wasn't threatened by extremism. extremism took place in Pakistan during the years, 11 years of military dictatorship, where the government in power did whatever it wanted. It as I write in the book, it banned all sorts of music performances, no music on the radio, no music on television, gender segregation. And it tried to, that's when you have a bad kind of a general who has his own view of Islam, you know, it's pretty difficult to have culture and arts flourish.
But it did not go away with the general. It's still there. I want to play one little bit more, if you'll permit me, Salman, from the documentary, The Rockstar and the Mullahs. Here's where you're confronting again this view, not in history, but much more recently. You're sitting with a firebrand cleric in Pakistan, Bishligar. His name's Mullah Electricity, one of those who've driven bans on music in Pakistan. And he's arguing with you. You visited him in his pharmacy in Peshawar and pointed out, you were pointing out, that in the vast majority of the Muslim world sees nothing wrong with music. But listen to his response. You asking him first about why elsewhere and not here, and then his response.
Why do 52 other Muslim countries allow music? Why don't they ban music?
Do those 52 countries have any idea about Islam?
You're saying that they're all non-believers, huh?
They're all sons of pigs. Iraq was burning. Did any bastard say a word?
Oh, come on. The whole world condemned that.
The whole world is America's stooge.
Oh, come on. Even non-Muslims protested against the war against Iraq. I was in New York. 400,000 people came to protest. Are you saying that they're all just non-believers?
They were doing that for themselves. They were frightened their country would be destroyed.
But you're saying in all 52 Islamic countries, everyone is a heathen?
Of course. There is no doubt about it.
All of them.
Pakistan's the biggest pig of all.
Salman Ahmad talking there with Mullah Electricity in Peshawar. We can hear your frustration, but who's winning, Salman? This contest of perspectives, who's winning?
Well, Tom, first of all, one has to understand what the conflict is before you start talking about winning. And the conflict is, this is a conflict within Islam, right, which is exacerbated by politics and war. In 9/11 and the world after 9/11, you've had people who want division to take place. The Al-Qaeda, their aim is to divide, to drive a wedge between a so-called, you know, which is a unnatural division also, that the West and the Muslim world. Well, almost more than 25% of the Muslims live in the West. They come from all different ethnic, racial, linguistic backgrounds, and they live in mainstream Western society. But because of the politics, because of the wars, there is a deep feeling within, general feeling between Muslim community that this, you know, the war on terror, as George Bush defined it, was a war against Islam. So that gave the extremists the perfect opportunity to sit on a platform and say, well, see what we told you? You were always, you know, wanting to sort of believe in this peace and love stuff and you know, this sort of cross-pollinization, but they don't want you. They don't respect you. They, meaning the West, don't respect Islam. They don't respect Muslims. So I think what the speech that President Obama made in Cairo was, for me, I thought that when you talk about a hit song, mm-hmm. when you want to sing a hit song to communicate something, he hit all those things in that speech. And what he's got to do, especially for Pakistan and Afghanistan, because it is such a crucial ally, is he's got to re-sing that song. The thing about great songs like I Want to Hold Your Hand and is that you got to sing them over and over again. I think what President Obama's got to say is America is allied to justice. And he's got to be able to say that, look into the eyes of the Muslim community, the Pakistanis and Afghanis, and say, look, you know, we believe in justice. It always has. And I think the majority of Muslims are not irrational, radical people.
We'll come back and talk about Salman Ahmad. We have to take a break. We're dying to hear more. Salman Ahmad from Junoon. Here's their big hit, Sayonese Soulmate. We'll be right back with much more. 800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Pakistani rock star Salman Ahmad about war, peace, music, and Islam. Last year, he played for a concert at the United Nations to raise money for displaced refugees from the Swat Valley, where the Pakistani military and the Taliban had been fighting. Salman started that concert off here with this music playing the Pakistani national anthem on guitar, Jimi Hendrix style. He joins us today from New York. His new book is Rock and Roll Jihad, a Muslim Rockstar's Revolution, and he doesn't mean Taliban style. You hear his message. What do you make of rocker Salman Ahmad's call for peace, love, and understanding? Have you given up on that? Are you still ready to try? And can Rock and Roll Jihad for Peace compete with drones and the Taliban? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. He's with us from New York. Shaquille is on the line from Longmeadow, Massachusetts. Shaquille, you're on the air. Hello,
hey, Tom.
Hi, Shaquille.
How are you?
We're well. Salman Ahmad is here.
Assalamu alaikum, Salman Ahmad.
Wa alaikum salam.
Tom and Salman, the reason I'm calling is I'm a huge fan of Salman Ahmad, me and my wife. And in mid-90s, I was one of the guys when we were in college. We arranged some of the local concerts with Junoon, and I had very good memories. And since then, I've been following him and listening to his music and everything. But I think on top of all his music, what the new adventure Salman is doing is a great effort to give a right name and a good image of our country and about religion, what it's all about. It's not about what Taliban or Al-Qaeda are doing at this point. And I think it takes a tremendous courage and a lot of efforts to do what he is doing, especially at this time when we are getting very weak in front of those enemies which are giving us very bad name.
Shaquille, let me ask you the same question I asked someone. It's too simple a question, and I'm sorry, I know that, but what's winning, Salman Ahmad's perspective or the Taliban perspective?
I believe in the long run, Salman and his, not only Salman, but all the people what believe the peace is, it's going to win. But I think Taliban, they are creating more problem at this point. But if we stick together and if we follow what the true religion, what true Islam is, we will defeat them at one day.
Well, you know, I thank you, Shaquille. Tom, if I could just jump in for a second.
Yes.
Both Rafia, your earlier caller, and Shaquille are echoing. You know, it's not like, you know, people might think, well, I'm this one rocker who kind of is, you know, if I didn't have the support or if I didn't understand the culture of Muslims living in Pakistan and Afghanistan. For example, you know, you just played this national anthem, which we did at the United Nations General Assembly, where Sting was a part of it, Gavin Rossdale, Susan Dayham, Bobby Sager, Jeff Skoll. These are people who understand Pakistan and understand the culture of Pakistan. Now, what had happened was the Taliban made a big, big mistake. They circulated this cell phone video of a girl, 17-year-old girl, who they were whipping because she had left her home on her own.
In the Swat Valley. Many people saw this on YouTube. Millions,
right?
Maybe.
So this was April of 2009. And I had just finished a concert in Colorado, and a friend of mine forwarded me that video. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, I couldn't believe that Swat Valley, a place where I used to visit with my grandmother when I was, you know, when I was a kid, had now been ceded to the Taliban, and this was their
vision of Islam. This was their way, vision of Islamic justice. So I took a flight back, and I took a 3-week tour of the country, speaking to college students, homemakers, professionals, and I said, "Is this okay with you? Because what happened?" So that one video, because everybody saw it, and one of the biggest TV channels, news channels in Pakistan called Jio. Everybody was outraged. You know, nobody wants to see their daughters being treated like that, no matter what the crime is. So there was a national outrage. The news channel ran that clip daily 7-8 times. And the media is very, very strong. It's very, very independent in Pakistan. That's when you got the entire country behind the Pakistan army, which is now in taking on the extremists. So here's my point, that the majority of Pakistan, it's 170 million people, 60% of whom are under the age of 24. If you broad brush them all as being sort of extremists, and you're making a huge mistake. And these are people who want all the good things, all the freedoms. You know, when you look at the when I was a kid going to junior high school, I used to learn the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, and one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. I think that could work for any place if you had liberty and justice for everybody. That's all they want. Nobody wants to win a cosmic war the way Osama bin Laden and Al Qaeda define it. And I'll give you another example also of in these chaotic times, you have heroic models. One of which author Greg Mortensen. Here's a guy, an American, who decides to build girls' schools in northwest Pakistan and Afghanistan. And people are welcome. He's a hero there. Because what do they need? They need education. And so here's a guy who's a Westerner. He's an American. And nobody's destroying his girls' schools. Nobody's going out killing Greg Mortensen. Even in my own, as I write in my book, you know, this conversation of America and Pakistan has been happening in my life right from high school. The kids I went to, in school, John Alec, Brian O'Connell, they came to Pakistan. Brian was a part of Junoon for more than 10 years. John Alec produced many of Junoon's platinum albums.
Your American classmate, Jim.
We went to high school together. And my new album, Rock and Roll Jihad, is designed by my my friend Paul Siegel, who I also talk about in the book, that we need to look with the heart, see with the heart. That's when masks fall down. And we have to think beyond the cookie cutter of daily politics. There is much more which connects us than divides us.
Who wouldn't want to support that? And by no means is what we're looking for a broad brush. We've seen the huge crowds turning out for your message. And, of course, many more listening beyond. But, I mean, you wrote yourself last spring, you said, your blog said, Pakistan is under threat from a minority of radical extremists who have nothing to do with Islam and everything to do with grabbing state power and nuclear weapons to create chaos and anarchy in the world. I mean, peace and love, let's find it. But that threat does worry people quite a lot, yourself included, I guess.
Well, look, if I was sitting, let's say we were sitting in the White House with President Obama, or he's listening to this broadcast, what I would say to him is winning the people. Win the people, they are in the majority, the extremists are a minority. If you take the people on your side, and, you know, look, the words he used in Cairo, that's a great song right there, that's a hit song, but you need to take the words, translate that into action. If you win the people, as people like Greg Mortensen and others, there's so many other people, Todd Shea, who's done so much work up north, building schools and rebuilding lives, people will embrace you. That's the natural, that's how Pakistanis are, you know. If you hug them once, they'll be they'll die for you.
Let's hear from Jonathan in Nashville, Tennessee. Jonathan, you're on the air with Salman Ahmad.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. And I have to say, just to start, that I really dig your music.
Thanks, bro.
My question is, the conversation has focused a lot on kind of who's winning in this ideological war. My question is, why, in your estimation, is it that in the West we don't hear more of your message? If it is indeed the kind of majority view of Islam, it's so disheartening that in the West it seems that near 95% of the coverage we hear about Islam is about radical extremism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if it's an issue of the media not covering moderate or tolerant Islam, or is it an issue of there not being a large unified voice that's putting the kind of messages that you're talking about out into the public sphere?
Great question, Jonathan. Salman?
That's a great question. And I think to answer that honestly, I think I have to take my own example of how did I learn about Western culture. It wasn't through, you know, news channels. It was through experiencing it. I mean, you know, I came here. My first ever rock concert, as I write in the book, I went to see Led Zeppelin. My best friends in the first 2 years I was, struggling to fit in into a New York suburb were TV, FM, radio. So I watched A Hard Day's Night. I listened to the Beatles. And so there's a passion there to know more. And unfortunately, I think from the Muslim world, not enough stories, not enough music, not enough poetry. There's not enough back and forth happening. And I think that's I lobby so much that, you know, don't think that, you know, rock musicians are these sort of soft peaceniks, you know, who are, you know, delusional. My hope is grounded in reality because I've lived in the most difficult terrain for much of my career, and I've seen, miracles take place. So I think we need to tell more stories from the Muslim world. We need to focus through movies. That's why I wrote this book, because I believe communication, communication, communication. And I want people to talk difficult issues, you know, to see with the heart and go beyond the cookie cutter of the daily politics.
Let's hear a little bit from your forthcoming album, Rock and Roll Jihad, same name as the book. This is Love, Can You Take Me Back? Salman Ahmad Janoon with its Love Can You Take Me Back from its upcoming album Rock and Roll Jihad. Lukman in Columbia, South Carolina. You're on the air with Salman Ahmad.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Lukman.
Yeah, I'm calling from Columbia. I'm a Muslim, and from my understanding of Islam, we as a Muslim, we don't support the Taliban or the Al-Qaeda because of their interpretation of Islam. Likewise, we don't support your guest because of his interpretation of Islam.
What about it?
His kind of music is not allowed in Islam without due respect.
Who says? What's the source of you, of you saying that, Lukman, if I may ask with respect?
We as a Muslim, because he mentioned earlier on that the Muslim holy book is the Quran. But I would like to correct him. The Muslim holy book is not only the Quran. We also have the Hadith. It's part of our holy book. Could just take, for instance, the five times daily prayer, the way to pray and what time to pray, all that is not in the Quran. We get that from the Hadith, and we have to follow that as a Muslim.
And so not for the Taliban, not for Al-Qaeda, but you're saying maybe not for Salman Ahmad-style Islam either. Let me hold that, if I may, Lukman, and get one more from Nick in Boston. Nick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am an Iranian Muslim Islam scholar and a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to say is that when they say it's against Islam, they're right, because in many places, in hadiths, you see that music is not allowed in Islam. There is not a mention of music in Quran. Read the whole book, not even once. So Muhammad himself never banned music. So all they say against music comes from the leaders who followed the Muhammad. Now, I want to congratulate Salman and encourage him to go ahead, make some more music, and don't pay attention to those people, because they want to keep people backwards. Now, this is a different world. And in the new world that we live in, obviously, rock music has a big and bigger place than ever. And I just want to congratulate him and ask him to keep doing what you're doing. And I know you're going to do that. Thank you very
thank
much.
You, thank you, brother.
Thank you, Nick.
Tom, can I just want to jump in for a moment. And I want to, you know, if there's an impression coming that I'm some rock musician which is saying, well, this is the way to do it, I am deeply respectful of tradition. My mentor was one of the greatest Sufi singers of all times, probably the most influential 20th century Sufi singer, Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan.
Mm.
Now, he had a 700-year tradition of singing Qawwali. Qawwali, for all of you who don't know, is religious Islamic Sufi-style singing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I had returned to Pakistan and I was sort of finding that how can I have an original voice, my mentor was Nusrat, and he was collaborating with Peter Gabriel, with Eddie Vedder, with Michael Brook. And so this sacred and secular dance, I asked him about it, and I write about this in my book. I said, you know, how can you, a lot of people will criticize you that this is sacred music. He said, look, in the Quran, it says that God loves diversity. If we don't celebrate diversity, our art will die. So that's one 20th century singer. But in the history of Islam, in the 1400 years, if you go to the Arab world, Turkey, South Asia, there are such incredible instances of virtuoso musicians, composers, respectful of tradition, but yet on the cutting edge of creating new sounds. So what I would say is we live in transformational times. We have to change the tempo and the riff and start jamming.
Salman Ahmad, it is great to talk with you. We hope you keep right on singing. The new book is Rock and Roll Jihad, A Muslim Rockstar's Revolution. Look for the album Rock and Roll Jihad coming out later this year. The video of Etisab, which you mentioned earlier, is up at our website. You can also read an excerpt from the book there at onpointradio.org. Salman Ahmad, it's just been wonderful to have you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, brother.
Salman Ahmad, founder and lead guitarist of the Pakistani band Junoon. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.